I'm Marty Moscow, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Well, there's a closely watched race for district attorney here in Philadelphia. The winner will replace disgraced DA Seth Williams, who pled guilty to bribery, was just disbarred, and faces sentencing this week. Tomorrow, our guest is longtime defense attorney, Democrat Larry Krasner. Today, our guest is Republican Beth Grossman. She worked as a prosecutor in the district attorney's office for more than 20 years and touts her leadership combating crime and violence in the city. She led the office's public nuisance task force, where she employed the practice of civil asset forfeiture. She joins us on Radio Times to tell us why she has the credentials and the experience to be Philadelphia's next DA. We'll talk about her long prosecutorial career and what her leadership will mean for the office of district attorney. And Beth Grossman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much. I am happy to be here, and good morning to your listeners.
Absolutely. In fact, to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Now is the time to put your questions directly to our guest, Beth Grossman. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You said Beth, not Seth. How would you make the office different?
Well, first of all, you lead by example, and you must maintain the highest standard of ethics and accountability, and you cannot take things for your own economic benefit. You cannot take favors. You cannot do essentially what Seth Williams has done. That's first and foremost. So, and I believe that in addition to attempting to restore public trust in the DA's office, you have to run an office that is open to the public with a degree of transparency.
And how, if you become Philadelphia's district attorney, how will life be different for people living and working in this city?
Well, I think people will understand that they have a district attorney who will maintain the highest standards of ethics and accountability and will always first and foremost champion the rights of victims and survivors of crime while protecting the constitutional rights of everybody in the system, including those accused of crime, but also a very proactive preventative DA, which means really working a lot with the school district and other groups to prevent youth from getting into the juvenile justice system at all. I think that's first and foremost, as well as a district attorney who will be out as many nights as possible to listen and actually hear what the public has to say. What are the concerns of the various neighborhoods throughout the city?
I want to pick up on all of that, but let me ask you about your party affiliation. You used to be a Democrat, you became a Republican, then you became a Democrat, and last year you became a Republican. What kind of Republican are you?
Well, first, let me say I was a Democrat all my life, and in 2013, I just quietly switched because I thought that the city needed more political balance, and that was the time when many Democratic public officials were starting to get investigated. So I just quietly switched. You know, I tend to be more conservative, law enforcement type of thing, but the only reason why I switched back in April of 2015 is because we don't have open primaries. And at that point, there was a judicial race with many of my colleagues who I've known for years who are running as Democrats in the primary. Few, if none at all, Republicans. So I wanted my voice to be heard. And then I return, you know, to the Republican Party. So, yes, I will always be, you know, law enforcement oriented.
And but will you always be a Republican?
Yes, I think it is time to expand more political balance in the city. That's very important to me because since 2013, we have had over a dozen judges, over half a dozen state reps, a United States congressman, our Pennsylvania attorney general, and now former district attorney Seth Williams, who is going to be sentenced tomorrow, and they are all Democrats. But let me make this very clear. I'm not saying that one party is worse than another because in 1951, when we got the Home Rule Charter, that's because there have been 50 years of Republican corruption. But when one party is in charge for so long, it leads to complacency and corruption. So I'm looking at it from a Philadelphia Republican standpoint.
How do you see then the Attorney General Jeff Sessions?
I do not carry water or agree with many things that Jeff Sessions does. I think a lot of his views of what he wants to do date back to the 80s when you had beginning of the war on drugs, which, in my opinion, did not work. It is not necessary. necessary, nor will it work in Philadelphia where we are today. I think, you know, when we're dealing with a heroin and opioid crisis, we're talking about a public health crisis where people need treatment. And then there are those who are dealing because they also have addiction issues. And then you look separately at the heavy duty drug trafficking organizations. But no, Philadelphia is unto itself, not on a federal level.
The Department of Justice, headed by Jeff Sessions, is threatening to withhold money to cities, use money that's earmarked for fighting crime. Philadelphia is suing Jeff Sessions in federal court because of this threat to withhold money. Where do you stand on this issue?
Is this with regard to sanctuary cities?
It is in regard to sanctuary
just
cities.
To clarify,
yes,
well,
absolutely.
When you take an oath as district attorney of Philadelphia, you're taking an oath to uphold the laws, whether they be federal, state, or local. So as a district attorney, I am going to uphold the law. I will not disagree or condone violating or, you know, wanting to violate the law. So I certainly hope, you know, that's up to Mayor Kenney. That's up to what happened in court. And I certainly hope that Philadelphia does not lose any money that should be earmarked towards crime fighting.
I mean, Mayor Kenney has been very outspoken saying that Philadelphia is and will remain a sanctuary city. Can you live with that?
Well, that is up to the mayor. I mean, if this is what it is, then we will deal with it accordingly. Of course. Of course. You have no other choice. But my role, if elected district attorney, is to prosecute cases where people violate the laws of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
But do you think Philadelphia's stand violates that law, the sanctuary city's law?
Well, yes, it does. But if that, again, that's up to the mayor. That's him. However this suit will turn out in federal court, that's not the role of a district attorney's office. And again, we do not enforce, a DA's office does not enforce ICE regulations. So let me make that very clear.
So you can kind of stay outside of whatever is going back and forth between the federal government and city government.
Correct. And the other thing that I also want to make clear is that, you know, the DA's office since my time beginning there in 1993 is that we prosecute all cases, regardless of anybody's residency status, if he or she is a victim. You know, we have never asked, what is your status? Nobody should be a victim of crime. Everybody deserves a good level of public safety.
You did head up the city's office, or I should say the district attorney's office of public nuisance task force to deal with the problems of bars and neighbors and all that. But part of that has been or was the civil forfeiture program. What do you say in support of that program?
Well, first of all, a couple things. So public nuisance task force unit dealt with all types of problem properties, violent bars, as well as drug properties and drug businesses. And the Pennsylvania Drug Forfeiture Act, which has never been declared constitutional, which still stands, was used. And I used it appropriately and accordingly because I have yet to encounter anyone who wishes to live next to a drug property. The story that always gets lost are folks who live next to drug houses where they can't sit on their porches. Kids walk past drug houses every day on their way to school. Property values go down. Crime goes up. So it is a very, very effective tool. But using that, what I will point out is the majority of cases were settled. Very few houses were really forfeited at the end of the day. There were usually those where there was no owner of record. You had a very bad out-of-state landlord who didn't care about it, or it was someone where there was guns, drugs, and we tried that case on principle because it was such a huge public safety threat.
There were a couple of cases that got some local and national attention having to do with the parents of a young man who was selling heroin and they lost their house.
They did not lose their house.
Okay, go ahead.
So if that's the case we're talking about in the Northeast, well, let me go back to one thing. We're in the middle of the biggest heroin and opioid crisis in Philadelphia. And I attended a symposium last year at Temple University where some medical information was presented where 2 out of 10 people, the first time that they try heroin, they become addicted because of, I guess, brain chemistry. So the case in the Northeast, the individual was dealing heroin. When officers go to a home and execute a warrant and they are not allowed in, a large dog is not restrained. The individual they wanted to arrest runs upstairs and flushes what is presumably drugs and results in a struggle with police officers. You know, that's concerning to me. So, but no, they did not lose their home. And the majority of cases were really settled.
The argument against using asset forfeiture is that it it can be used against someone who is not yet convicted of a crime. They're suspected of a crime, but they haven't been convicted yet. Why not wait until the conviction and then take their assets?
Well, the law doesn't require it. It is a civil action where the Commonwealth or the DA's office has to establish that the owner knew or consented or should have known that drug activity was going on, which could be done by direct evidence or circumstantial. Now, in light of the fact that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has come down with a case which actually raised the burden of proof from a preponderance of evidence to clear and convincing, which raises it more for the Commonwealth with some other factors, has actually clarified a lot of things, which made it a little bit harder for the Commonwealth to seek forfeiture, as well as some current litigation going on in which the DA's office has agreed that no forfeiture funds will be used for law enforcement purposes. So it's really unclear where the future of forfeiture stands. Now, that being said, if elected, I would use it in a different case in light of things that have changed, which one, where there is a conviction of the owner.
A
conviction of the owner, correct. Where there is a large connection with a drug trafficking organization, where you're talking about kilos, where you're talking about connections with cartels in Mexico, which we do have, or where where it's also a pill mill, you know, for example, if it is a doctor's office or a home, that type of thing. So, you know, every case is looked at it, but, you know, for those that are really serious public health things, that's what you look at.
Under the way it has been used, though, what happens if you're innocent? I mean, what happens? And I realize that, I mean, no one wants to live next to a drug house, and there's no question that drug dealing can really make life extremely difficult for people in that particular neighborhood. But what if someone gets caught up and they're innocent? How do they get their assets back?
Well, you know, as I ran it, like, every case was reviewed. And if there were some cases where clearly the owner didn't know in any way, you know, we would not bring them. Or if it was something, we were always happy to settle those cases, like, you may have your house back or we will return your money. Everybody had a right to go to court. You know, despite what is often written in papers mistakenly, things weren't taken without process in court. That being said, and you know, what I want to point out is, for example, when there were the cases as of late with the six narcotics officers who were tried in federal court and were subsequently acquitted, you know, prior to their trial, we returned all money and proceeds that actually had been confiscated. We didn't even go to court on them, and we drew any forfeiture petitions against properties that they had been involved in. So, you know, you look at each case, you do what's right, and we're always happy, you know, part of the litigation is to see what kind of case do we have here, and if it wasn't appropriate to go forward, we did not. We worked out a settlement agreement. Just make sure that, you know, this doesn't happen again. We just want, you know, forfeiture is just proper management of a property.
That is Beth Grossman. She's a Republican, and she wants to be Philadelphia's next district attorney. And again, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Here's a chance, if you live in Philadelphia, to put your questions, your comments directly to Beth Grossman. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I'm Artie Moscowane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me just pick up on one thing. Where should those assets go? Let's assume that there is money from the seizure of assets. Where should that money be appropriately and properly used?
Well, under the Pennsylvania forfeiture statute, it actually is written that forfeiture money can actually be used for crime fighting or drug fighting initiatives, which I think is a fabulous use of money. And let me make clear, as chief of the Public Nuisance Task Force, I had no decision-making authority or even participation, any decision-making as to where forfeiture funds were met. That was above my pay grade. I was never privy to that. So I think actually being able to use and disseminate those forfeiture funds to prevent things, I think that's an excellent use, whether it's helping improve a commercial corridor or, you know, an educational segment for kids about drug prevention. I think a lot of good can be done with those funds. And again, as I said earlier, as part of a settlement agreement in federal court, those funds will no longer be used for law enforcement purposes.
About, I was reading about 6% of people in the city are responsible for about 60% of the more violent or more heinous kinds of crimes. What can the district attorney's office do to address that subset of the population?
Well, I think it's proper sentencing, making sure that we are bringing the case to the best of our ability with the best evidence. You know, that's what you have to do. But I also think when you're talking about violent crimes, I think included in that has to be aggressive prosecution of gun crimes, including illegal possession of guns. I mean, that's where most of our crimes come from. That's the cause of death in homicides, you know, gun violence, gunshot wounds. So I think you really have to be very aggressive about illegal gun possession, as well as focusing on straw purchasing. And also, you know, looking differently from my work in the Public Nuisance Task Force, if we start to see a gun shop where, you know, looks like you're seeing a lot of, you know, straw purchases, can we bring a civil injunction action in court?
To shut down a gun shop like
sure.
that?
Sure. Sure. It's an effective tool. We've done that with nuisance bars under the liquor code, but you can certainly bring a type of civil injunction action. Or is it something that warrants a grand jury investigation?
You'd mentioned pills, you know, coming out of doctors' offices. And as we know from the opioid epidemic, some of it began in medicine cabinets, the fact that there was just so much pain medication that ended up essentially on the street. How do you suggest getting closer to that problem?
Sure, several things. And for example, it's a multi-prong approach. First of all, legislation. In fact, Governor Wolf has really focused on limiting the amounts of prescriptions during emergency room visits as well as for minors. So I think that's very important. I would like to see it one step further, like Governor Christie did in New Jersey, where there are limits to prescriptions just for general practitioner visits. Right. Because, you know, when you prescribe hooking amounts, as I say, like 40 pills a pop on a script, you know, and once it runs out, you can't get it renewed and you're reduced to seeking out heroin. So I think there's that. I also think it is aggressive prosecution of these pill mills. And, you know, that's what you look at, as well as maybe working, you know, with the AMA, standards of prescription reporting and education in medical schools.
Would you retain the approach to dealing with small amounts of marijuana in Philadelphia?
I think at this point it's a ticket. I am fine with that. I think there are far more other serious things that we need to focus on, especially dealing with the heroin and opioid crisis. So, you know, I have no issue with it being legalized. It's not something that I wish to burden the court system with. So, you know, if you're looking at it where it's either a code violation notice or a prosecution, it should be one or the other. So I'm certainly fine with it as being a ticket. However, from a public nuisance standpoint, I feel like it should sort of be the same. There's no open container violation. I don't think you should be smoking marijuana, you know, in Rittenhouse Square or on the street or around children.
And that is Beth Grossman. She's our guest in this hour of Radio Times. We're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation talking about why she wants to be Philadelphia's next district attorney. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Let me just recap, talking with Beth Grossman. She wants to be a district attorney of Philadelphia. The election is in a couple of weeks. She is the Republican candidate. Tomorrow, Larry Krasner, the Democratic candidate, will be our guest on the show to talk about what he would like to do if he becomes the new district attorney. I should add that Beth Grossman worked as a prosecutor in the district attorney's office for about 20 years, and she also headed up the office's Public Nuisance Task Force, where she did employ the practice of civil asset forfeiture. We spent a fair amount of time talking about that. But we want to talk about other issues as well, although I have some comments here, which I will read. And here is that phone line. It is 1-888-477-9499. This is a race, I should say, that's got national attention way beyond the borders here in Philadelphia. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. In fact, we have a tweet here. We understand the benefits of civil asset forfeiture if elected. How will you prevent egregious abuses? We touched on this earlier, but go ahead, Beth.
Sure. As I said, I think, you know, the law's a pendulum. It changes, and you have to look at, you know, what is the best approach now. And I think, as I said earlier, I think maybe just reserving the practice of forfeiture, especially with properties, with real estate, for those convicted of crime, or where it is involving a drug trafficking organization, where you're talking about kilos with guns, or if there is a storefront or an office where it is an illegal pill mill. You know, for example, a lot of people don't know or maybe don't remember is that the Dr. Gosnell Abortion Clinic began as an investigation as a pill mill because so many prescriptions were being illegally written there, and including when the Philadelphia District Dangerous Drug Offenders Unit went in with another narcotics investigative agency, and I actually headed the Dangerous Drug Offender Unit for quite some time. They went in and they found that complete house of horrors. So forfeiture, and we actually moved to forfeit the abortion clinic, but we subsequently withdrew because it ended up really being more of a homicide case with accompanying civil litigation. And I thought it was best that, you know, let the decedent's family or civil suits, that might be an asset that they could go after in a civil suit.
And we should say that Judge Gosnell is in prison now.
That is correct. That is correct.
An email. Do you believe in honoring ICE detainer requests? This, of course, has to do with sanctuary cities. Honoring them is a clear violation of the Constitution if the person is free to leave of the non-citizenship charge.
I believe in it if somebody is getting ready to be released after serving a violent felony offense. But what I've always consistently said is that, you know, ICE must have the proper paperwork, be it a judicial warrant or, you know, the proper appropriate federal paperwork. You know, they must dot their I's and cross their T's for that.
Let me see what Alan from Philadelphia has to say. Alan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Hi,
yes,
Alan.
Hi. I have a question about this nuisance law that has been proposed by the city council. Mm-hmm. And right now we have a problem with the 11 p.m. law that has been abused. And a lot of Chinese takeout restaurant owners are very concerned about it because over 95% of the tickets were given to Chinese takeout restaurant owners. And we are concerned that this nuisance law would be doing the same thing. So my question is, you know, how do you see it?
It's a good question, Alan. Thanks for the call to Radio Times.
It is a very good question. But what I will respond, Alan, is that, you know, when I was dealing with a nuisance business, that every business is looked at individually. So is there a problem with a, you know, a particular business, not just, okay, you know, it's a code violation. What else is going on with that? And with regard to nuisance law is that, because a lot of times it's the police who issues these citations, that they must be issued consistently and fairly across the board to everybody who is staying open past 11 o'clock. It cannot and should not be targeted to one particular type of business. So I agree with you with that. But just speaking from the Public Nuisance Task Force and how I ran that is that we would never, ever seek to close down a business without looking at, you know, what type of case is this, you know, not just blanketly closing down something. In fact, more often than not, my approach was always to work with the store owner to be like, look, here are the problems. Here's how you could be a better business owner. And I'd rather have a constructive dialogue like that than harm somebody economically.
Alan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me put some other things on the table. Where do you stand on the death penalty?
Pennsylvania is such an odd one. You know, our state, last time somebody was involuntarily put to death was in 1962. Last time where they voluntarily waived their appellate rights, which was Gary Heidnik in 1999. So I think it's not something that I will blanketly outright, unlike my opponent, say I will never, never use it. But it has to be in those unbelievably catastrophic cases. And God forbid we have a situation like Las Vegas here, then that is an appropriate case for the use of a death penalty. The murder of a vulnerable, you know, member of society. I know, you know, I don't know what the DA's office did, but over the summer, I think there was a one-year-old boy who was sodomized and murdered. And if that doesn't involve torture or is ripe for consideration of a death penalty, then I don't know what is. But because it cost so much to litigate them post-trial, you know, we have to, you know, I think I would, I must look at what is the best use of our resources in the DA's office with our budget.
Do you see it as a deterrent? I mean, as you say, in Pennsylvania, so rarely ever used. Do you see it, though, as a deterrent? I understand about these heinous, heinous crimes and the impulse to want to put someone to death. But do you see it as a deterrent?
Look, it may be for some people. It may not. You know, I can't say. But I have to say, in some cases, that is the appropriate punishment.
Where do you stand on cash bail? And I know this has come up in a couple of the debates you've been involved in.
Sure. Cash bail, I think what I really like is over the past several years, the DA's office, public defender's office, the courts, and probation and parole through the MacArthur grant have really begun working collaboratively, which I really like that approach. And if elected, I would continue that. And part of this MacArthur grant was to reduce pretrial prison population. So I don't have an issue with eliminating cash bail for misdemeanor nonviolent offenses. I think it's appropriate as cash bail is to ensure appearance at court for your case. It is not to punish. And if we're creating overcrowding, which prohibits those who are serving county sentences from getting resources there, it's not making any sense. So I think I'm happy to continue that practice, to look into it. Obviously, every case needs to be looked at right. individually.
But you're saying for more misdemeanor charges, no cash bail?
It depends. Not all. I mean, you know, I always get concerned with cases such as domestic violence or stalking. But if you're talking about non-serious, I mean, yes, it may be a public nuisance issue, but you also have to look at, you know, what is the type of crime? What is this threat to society? And this person, more likely than not, is going to appear for court.
That is Beth Grossman, and again, she is running for district attorney here in Philadelphia. She is a Republican, and you can join us any questions or comments at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Jay to join us. Jay, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I had a question, and this came up, you know, just kind of as a topic a while ago for me. Concerning asset forfeiture, it just seems like in so many instances it's kind of like you're guilty until proven innocent. And what I mean is, okay, so like take a circumstance where it doesn't have anything to do with anything to do with an investigation or anything like that. Let's just say you were driving down the road or whatever and you had $5,000 or $10,000 on yourself, and I was told that that can be taken away from you until you prove where it came from. And I don't understand that. You know, it's like, where is there a law saying that a person has to deal in, you know, in credit cards or, you know, your debit card or anything like that?
You're talking about cash here, Jay, right?
Yes, I'm talking about cash. I'm talking about having certain sums of money on yourself. And I would also like to know, like, what is that sum of money that kind of prompts that kind of thing, you know, where it'll be taken away from you until you can prove where it came from.
Jay, let me see if I see a quizzical look on our guest face, but go ahead.
Well, anytime that cash is seized, it is seized pursuant to an arrest. So, and it's either possession with intent to deliver, and in some cases it was possession, you know, possession of narcotics. So there's always something that's accompanying it. So, and police, you know, it's the police department who seizes the cash and puts it on a property receipt number. So it's not the district attorney's office is doing that. If there are appropriate grounds to move to forfeit it, we do that. And then we work it out, we go to court, and somebody has to prove that it was not connected to drug dealing or whether it was something else such as illegal video pirating or prostitution or gambling or things of that nature. So it is always connected to a crime.
Hmm. Jay, thanks for the. I'm not sure we can directly address what you were calling in about, but I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me read an email from Ilya. Her campaign, your campaign, Beth, is distributing door hangers and leaflets that mention how immigrants don't deserve any benefits. This does not discuss the legal status of immigrants. What does this have to do with the DA position?
Well, I think we need to talk about the whole issue of immigration in our sanctuary city is very, very relevant as to what is going on. And, you know, it goes to quality of life. It goes to different neighborhoods. It goes to the issue of jobs and unemployment. So it's a very long, it's a big umbrella type issue. And it's also, you know, what I think, and again, our whole issue of sanctuary city and how it is going to be enforced and how it affects society.
Broadly speaking, though, people who have come here undocumented have a lower crime rate than native-born Americans.
Well, yeah. That certainly may be, but those who are not here legally and are committing crime should not have more rights than those who are citizens and are committing crime. It's two sides of the same coin. I mean, two different sides of the same coin.
But people who are committing crimes, it doesn't matter where they're from. They're still arrested, are they not?
Correct.
So whether we're a sanctuary city or not, they're still going to be arrested.
If you commit a crime and the evidence is there, you certainly will be. Yes.
You've been endorsed by the police union, I guess it is, and also by the firefighters.
I'm very proud to also say, the Philadelphia Inquirer.
And
so let's add that.
Absolutely.
As well as the support of the Spanish American Law Enforcement Association, Returning Citizens for a Better Philadelphia, United Veterans Council of Philadelphia, Transit Police, as well as the Pennsylvania State Police. So, and I am honored to have all of them.
Where do you stand on Black Lives Matter? How do you see that group?
I don't actually look. My concern is from a prosecutorial role, is that if somebody is arrested, we prosecute those cases. If somebody is a victim, you champion their rights. So it's as simple as that. It is irrelevant what group to me, what group an individual belongs to. We all have a right, a First Amendment group, to belong to everything. But I just see everything strictly from a prosecutorial or district attorney's office.
There have been, according to what I read, the prosecution of something like 413 or 443 police cases of alleged misconduct since 2007 in about the last 10 years. No criminal charges, though. I'm curious about how you would prosecute allegations of police misconduct.
I have prosecuted police misconduct during my time in the investigations division. So I see no reason to change course in that. Public official corruption is important. It must be investigated. It must be prosecuted, be it police officer or city employee.
And that is Beth Grossman, and I'm Artie Moscowane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. You mentioned the fact that, and it's true, there are so many people in prison. Many of them do come out. How can the district attorney's office address the issue of reentry, which, of course, is such a critical process to try to ensure that people then don't recommit and then end up back in prison again?
I think it is so important for all of us to be involved together. I've had the pleasure of meeting so many reentry groups throughout this campaign, and I am a firm supporter of them. Because if you have paid your debt to society, you have served your sentence, then I would rather have somebody become a productive member of society and go on. I think it's outstanding. I think it's necessary. And whatever role the district attorney's office can play in that, I am fully supportive of it. Also including, I would actually like to have returning citizens come and speak to new classes of prosecutors, because we were really never trained that across the aisle is another, you know, human being. I'm not talking about the giant catastrophic cases, as I call them, but just to see, because until you talk to somebody and you get a sense of what it's like, you're not going to understand. And I think that is a very, very important thing that must be done training-wise for the next generation of prosecutors.
If you become Philadelphia DA, what would be your first thing that you would want to do?
First thing I want to do to accomplish is to make sure that we have an established code of conduct, code of ethics for everybody within the district attorney's office, from prosecutors, support staff, as police personnel, and to make sure that that is up on our website, to make sure that the public understands this, that we are going to accord ourselves pursuant to ethics, city ethics, state ethics, federal ethics, as well as the law, to regain the public's trust in light of what has happened with Seth Williams. And I think that's the first thing that needs to be done.
Do you think the book should be thrown at him, Seth Williams?
You know, as I take no pleasure out of this. I thought really this whole race would be Beth, not Seth. It turned into something different. But what I must say is, under, you know, he did do some good things for the office. He really did. We've had an increase in so many diversion programs for people who have, you know, maybe first or second time getting into the system, where they get help, they learn job training, or to get a GED, or some cases, you know, going to college with expungement eligibility. I think that needs to be commended, as well as dividing up the office geographically. It makes us better prosecutors. So I believe in you give credit where credit is due.
Beth Grossman, thank you for joining us today
Radio
Times. And again, she is the Republican candidate for District Attorney of Philadelphia. I should add that there is a Center City residents debate tonight.
Tomorrow night.
18th and Spruce at the synagogue. Beth Zion, Beth Israel, and also a debate later in the week at the new the Northeast Chamber of Commerce Cottage Green on Ashton Road.
That is correct. That is Wednesday evening.
Very good. And Larry Krasner will be here tomorrow to tell us why he wants to be Philadelphia's next district attorney. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thanks for joining us.